Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the show where journalists talk journalism. Coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Peter Frey, and I am the co-director of the Centre for Media Transition at the University of Technology in Sydney. And my producer today is Rod Chambers. Last time on the show, with the Dean of the Columbia Journalism School, Steve Cole, I promised more panels and more women. Well, today, you're getting half of that promise, the important half, more women. And not just any person of the female gender. Today, my guest is the editor of the Sydney Morning Herald. She is, in fact, only the third woman to have held that position in the paper's 180-year history. Welcome to the show, Lisa Davies.
Thanks, Peter.
Did you know that with your appointment, there's now been more women editors of the Sydney Morning Herald than editors who were also Methodist ministers?
That wasn't actually something I knew, no.
So we've had three women.
I'm very glad.
Three women and two clerics.
Well, terrific, yeah. I think.
How does that make you feel?
Well, look, I'm pretty proud of the fact that I am, in fact, the third female editor, and I think long may it continue. I hope that sometime over the next few editors there's more than that.
Well, I'm sure there will, and the Methodist clerics will be a...
I'm not confident that they'd get a run these days.
No, but... I don't reckon so. I don't think they're in the running. Wanted.
No,
Methodist cleric and editor.
Possibly not.
No. Okay, we're on safe ground there.
We don't even have a religion reporter.
No. Well, maybe. Well maybe if we need one of those.
Maybe. Yeah.
Anyway, so before we get to talk to you about you and about journalism and whether talking about the Prime Minister's religion is fair game for politicians, talking about religion, we better deal with the news to hand, which is that, I guess, as you know, many of your journos are worried about Nine Entertainment. The Sydney Morning Herald is still a relatively new parent, yep, hosting a $10,000 a plate fundraiser for the Liberal Party. That dinner made about $700,000 for the Libs, and the guests included the Prime Minister, the Communications Minister, Paul Fletcher, Trade Minister Simon Birmingham, and a host of other ministers, and a few top end of the town types like Harry Triguboff. So more to the point, of course, it has raised concern about the SMH's independence. Are you worried?
No, I'm not, for a number of reasons. But I should say from the outset that ever since the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age and the Financial Review were the old Fairfax business purchased by the Nine Group, mm-hmm, we've been really happy with our new owners. I think the fit is good. We feel part of a very big and powerful media organisation, and that is hasn't always been the case, as I'm sure you remember, often feeling buffeted by the Absolutely. Winds of change, as they say. As part of the wider Nine Group and media of all kinds, of course, facing a lot of challenge at the moment, we feel quite stable, and we haven't, we haven't seen any cost cutting in recent times since the 2000 since I became editor in 2017, which was the last lot. We feel really safe and quite powerful, and I think when we're being spoken about these days, we're being spoken about because of the journalism we do, and that's for me very gratifying, and of course everyone. So I think basically what's disappointing about this decision and is that it detracts from that. We actually broke the story. Yep. It was actually me who got the tip that it was happening.
Oh, really?
And I passed it on to Kyla, our yep, CBD columnist, who yep, quickly published it around the same time that Joe Aston at the AFR did. So the story was actually broken by
which
is good. I guess initially perhaps none of us had really appreciated that. While it said that, you know, Hugh Marks and the Nine and some of the Nine team were hosting it, I assumed it was in a very, you know, like you rent out a dining room
or
a function centre, correct. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out to be that case, and we've just put up a story this afternoon that says that Hugh Marks has admitted it was a mistake,
right,
and he will likely not be making that mistake again.
Because it was on the set of the Today Show.
It was, yeah, and
in the house.
No confirmation that Georgie Gardner was there or any of the team, but it did seem a pretty odd decision. And I mean, Hugh, for his side, says that of course Nine has a lot of reason to be talking to the government, regulatory issues, you know, the freedom of...
Absolutely.
There are a lot of reasons. It's a company and we need to have a good dialogue with them. Actually helping the Liberal Party to raise money is not, and I don't think anyone would cavil with the fact that it's not the job of a media company to help one party raise money. So it is disappointing, but I think we've all learnt something from it. And hopefully the readers also realise that, you know, nothing has changed. That event did not change the way we do journalism, or has it any intention of doing that. So.
Okay, well, we'll get on to some of the great journalism that has happened since the merger. Before we, but, you know, I guess it's understandable the media union and the
Heads Committee. No, I fully endorse what they said. Yeah. I mean, I think myself and our executive editor, James Chessel, has put out a, you know, we spoke to the News 4 earlier, and he, you know, he doesn't propose to speak for Hugh, but, you know, on behalf of all of us, he raised concerns as early as yesterday morning, and hopefully that's where the matter stays now.
Okay, no drama. Mm. Okay, well, before we get to all the, you know, the great stuff, I'm going to ask you a little bit about Alan Jones.
Oh, good.
Right. So if all goes to plan, Alan and Ray Hadley and the crew will be 100% owned by Nine at some point in the future. Now, needless to say, GB is very much a different culture to the Herald.
It is.
It always has been.
Yes.
And it always will be, I suspect.
I think so.
Yes. But so, let's not concentrate on Alan, but if you had a columnist advising the Prime Minister to stick a sock down the throat of the Prime Minister of New Zealand, would you sack them?
I think it would be, it's very difficult. I think.
It's difficult to sack them? Or?
It's difficult because of his popularity. And I think the way he sought to clarify his point, you know, someone might say that he misspoke and didn't actually intend. So he's made his defense of that. Look, I disagree. And I think he has shown he has, He often speaks badly. Oh. Speaks badly to women.
Yeah.
If you listen to the tape of him speaking to Louise Herron, the CEO of the Opera House last year, I personally felt quite affronted by that. If I had been on the receiving end of that kind of tirade, I would have been extremely upset.
He apologised about that as well.
Yeah,
there is a pattern.
There is a pattern.
Yeah.
Look, until such time as the Nine board wholly owns 2GB, I don't think they can. Do much.
No.
But I think Alan would be aware, as I think Ray Hadley or others who may, you know, do similar things should be aware, that I think Hugh Marks has shown he's not necessarily afraid of big talent, evidenced by Karl Stefanovic's departure from Today, and, you know, a few other big changes that he's made there in recent times. He's not afraid of that. And look, it's arguable. I mean, of course, Alan Jones has the highest rating radio program in the country, and he should be, you know, he's got a long track record of doing that role and performing it to the standard that his listeners enjoy. I'm not sure. I think it is overinflated, his importance, and that still makes me a bit, it surprises me how much certain government or opposition ministers kowtow to him.
Well, there's that fantastic photograph of the former Premier Mike Baird going down to Alan's place to tell him about the Greyhound decision.
Exactly.
I mean, remarkable.
It is. But that is the way that he does business, and it's up to other people to change that as much as it is up to him to maintain modern standards.
Whatever they may be in Alan's case.
In Alan's case. Well, I do think there's been a huge backlash to that, and I think he's on notice that one more time and he's probably gone.
And just on that first question, though, if you had a columnist who did that, would you get rid of them?
Quite possibly. I think if the reader response was anything like it has been to Alan more broadly, and, you know, if it went against the principles that we hold or that I would hold as the editor of the Sydney Morning Herald, I think I probably would.
Fair enough. Okay, let's talk about you. Easier things than you. So you've been editor for about, was it two and a half years?
Yep.
And during that time, there was that round of cost cutting.
The first 6 months from hell,
yeah. Well, it was about $30 million out of the business. And then there was a little reorganization editorial structure. And then there was the merger with Nine. So it's been quiet.
Wild. Yeah. No, it certainly hasn't been quite what I imagined.
So is it in that period, you know, keeping your eye, because you're very editorially focused, and that's your job.
Yeah.
But keeping your eye on the editorial board with all that going on, is that hard?
It's really hard. There are only a certain number of hours in the day, and sometimes think to myself how nice it would have been to be an editor when there was just one newspaper once a day and the deadline was about 10 p.m. or something luxurious. Right. Whereas I take responsibility for a reasonably fast moving website and two or three editions of the newspaper as well as a tablet app. Mm. Obviously, it is extremely hard to keep across everything. Some days, a bit like today, I feel as though I'm not entirely clear what has actually been happening today. I couldn't tell you what has been happening at ICAC, but happily that's because it's been a pretty quiet day. No. But I think, I'm very grateful that I've got an incredibly competent and passionate team who take responsibility for different parts of the machinery. And we seem to get there at the end of every day somehow.
Oh, I'm sure you will. What keeps you awake at night, though? About the job, I mean. What keeps you awake at night? Maybe you sleep like a baby.
Well, actually, I'm actually a pretty good sleeper, I must say. But I do worry about the ability to remain calm in a pretty frenetic world. Not me personally, because I can be both calm and frenetic. But I worry that it's easy to get caught up in the craziness of certain incidents or news events.
It's compelling, right?
It is. And you want to kind of get dragged along by stories. But also, you know, we, as you know, you mentioned in your opening, the Herald's been around for more than 180 years and our readers and, you know, the wider community rely on us to maintain a pretty centrist and sensible course. Mm. So to get too caught up in some of those issues is problematic. You know, the falling readership of print newspapers, it's still where a huge amount of our revenue comes from. So that, of course, is worrying. And just actually basically staying across things. I mean, sometimes I have people call me and go, I can't believe you published XYZ. And I just think,
Did
we? Well, and usually it's some quite, you know, like a different part of the bit, like in the entertainment or lifestyle that, you know, isn't always front of mind for me. Yeah. But
well, it's interesting, isn't it? They come at you from all angles.
And it can be so varied. And as I'm sure you remember, you can be attacked from the left, from the right, from all sides, and also in the space of one day.
Well, that's when you know you're doing your job.
Well, stay in the middle.
Yeah,
yes.
Stay in the middle. We'll get back to that question about the middle in a second. Mm. But I did want to touch on one of my favourite Sydney Morning Age stories in recent months was that investigation into Crown Casino, which is ongoing.
Yep.
Linking some very interesting Chinese high rollers and influencers and money laundering and various other things. So tell us about that. You know, that was kind of the first big co-pro with 60 Minutes.
It was.
As opposed to working with the ABC, who were, you know, your normal buddies.
That's right. So normal bedfellows.
Normal bedfellows. So how was that? Was it different? Was there more money splashing around? Or?
So, well, I think, yes, you can see from the high production values of 60 Minutes that they don't leave too many costs on the table. That project had obviously been in the works for some time. Nick McKenzie has wanted for some time to do something with 60, and I think the fact that it worked out with this story was terrific. He worked very closely with a producer there, and in fact, the way it ended up rolling out. Nick McKenzie obviously had first byline, but then Grace Tobin, who is the producer at 60, got second byline because between them they worked incredibly closely to get all the ducks in a row and worked quite secretively for months. You know, there were only a very small number of people involved in the very sort of initial brainstorming about how we would do it. And, you know, Kirsty Thompson, who's
the producer of 60.
The EP of 60 EP, Minutes, sorry, yep. was pretty much right, working very, very closely with Nick's direct boss based at The Age. So it came together really, really well. I loved, in fact, I'd watched it before it went to air, but I loved watching on Twitter people's responses to it because, you know, there had been a rather overly dramatic promo TV.
What was it that no Australian should miss it?
Change the nation or something.
Yeah. It was a little overdone.
It was slightly overdone. And I had people going, oh, my God, are you going to bring down a prime minister? Yeah. Like, no. But, I mean, it is a huge story. And, you know, watching Twitter and watching people's reaction to it was very gratifying because I saw people say things like, oh, I feel like it's Monday night, not Sunday night, and I'm watching Four Corners. And I think another comment that was quite nice and quite prevalent was, oh, maybe the Sydney Morning Herald can have a really strong effect on Channel 9 and not Channel 9 television and not the other way around.
Do you think that's
Well, possible? I know that they're really open to it. And actually, if you look at the ratings from, it was the second highest 60 minutes of the entire year in terms of its ratings. But also, interestingly, someone was telling me the other day that not only live was it that those ratings figures, but on catch up on the Nine Now streaming part of Nine, it's had a huge, another huge go.
See, like, that's great at the world we live in, right?
Totally. And people, I mean, people aren't booking appointments to watch TV anymore, live, live commercial television. But I think it was a really great first toe in the water.
What's the next one?
Well, I'm trying to get McClymont on TV, of course.
You got to get McClymont on TV.
She loves it.
Get her to read her book and people watch it.
That's right, exactly. She could read the menu.
She could, I'm sure.
and people would pay to see it, probably.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, so we're talking about things like on demand or what have you. So this show, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, future journalism. You mentioned a few things earlier.
Yeah.
What do you, let's talk about some of the hard ones, like the kind of social media platforms, the impact of, you know, Facebook and Google. You would have, you know, had a look at the ACCC's report. It said, you know, Facebook and Google, you have a period of time, I think it was about 9 months, probably less now, to get together with news industry and work out some sort of fair payment for the use of the of editorial content. How hopeful are you around that?
Look, I think I'm generally an optimist, so I'm trying to be optimistic about it. I think it's in everyone's interest to work together. We need, in some respects, rely on Facebook and Google to get our content out there. We have an incredibly strong, committed, paying audience, but in terms of our ability to reach more people, search through Google and social media through Facebook is extremely important. It's not the be-all and end-all. We are a subscriptions business and we believe what we do is worth paying for. But I think, you know, if you look at it from our side, that's important to maintain strong relationships with them. But also for them too, I mean, Google has developed a number of the Google News Initiative. They're working in newsrooms. They're working with the Walkley Foundation really try and give something back to our newsrooms.
Absolutely.
Facebook also has a bit of a PR problem after
quite a larger period.
Quite a large PR problem. So it's in their interest too to really work with us closely. And on a very sort of grassroots level, our social media and digital teams work quite closely with both of those organisations day to day. So things are okay. I guess it's just a matter of, you know, coming to the getting all sides to come to the table.
So they need to give you a very large check.
That would be nice. No. But also, I mean, we don't necessarily want their money, but we want to be properly, well, I mean, that would be nice. But I also think we need to maintain our independence and that they need to value the content that we're helping them to serve because they're really just publishers. They don't own what we do.
Well, they would argue they're not publishers.
Well, sorry, yes. Yeah. They're just hosts or whatever. What are the words that they
Well, they use all different sorts of words. I mean, I think they're a kind of quasi, kind of they're not, you know, not publishers. They're more than just simply, you know, passive players. So there's a...
Yeah, I think that's true, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's an interesting time. And I just think this next 6 to 9 months will really set the tone for the next few years.
And everyone's watching.
But the world is watching.
The world is watching. Yeah. And, you know, I think we've sort of led the way to some extent. But where it goes to from here will be interesting.
Mm. Talking about one of the other things ACCC talked about was making it easier for news organisations to get charitable status. Now, that isn't, I'm sure, going to happen to Nine or the Herald anytime
don't
soon.
Don't think so.
Oh, by the way, I did mean to ask, how many paying subscribers do you have now? What's the official number?
I think it's Commercial in Confidence.
Is it? Yeah. No, it's not, surely.
I think it might be.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think we talk about it. We have a goal to have...
you can tell us about it. It was just us in the room. It's me, you and Rod. I mean, no one else will hear it.
No, that's right. I can't.
Is there a goal?
Yeah, so we've publicly said that we want to have 500,000 paying digital subscribers. A time frame on that is not particularly set, but it's and it's ambitious. But we've
probably, so I can't ask you how far you've got down to that.
We'd made significant inroads. I would say
we could just spend the next 20 minutes trying to work out where we get a number.
Is it between?
Yes, that's right. So would
what,
it be
50
bigger than an egg, smaller than a dinosaur? okay, we'll move on. But I was interested, talking about charity, why I mentioned the charity thing was Judith Nielsen, the Judith Nielsen Fund. So that Judith Nielsen gave the Herald and the Age some money recently to employ an Indigenous photographer and reporter.
Indigenous
How are you doing with that?
Yeah, really great. And it's one of the most gratifying things that I've done so far. It was my proposal. And it came on the back of a back and forth with the Judith Nielsen Institute. But So we've hired the journalist. She is terrific and will be starting end of October. And we're just in the final stages of employing a photographer.
Can we have the journalist's name?
Yes, I probably can give you that exclusive if you like.
Scoop.
Her name is Ella Archibald Binge and she's been working at NITV in Queensland.
Fabulous.
She was at NITV in New South Wales, but in Sydney, but she's moving back to be based in the Herald newsroom.
Fabulous.
Which is really exciting. Stan Grant is going to be
A mentor.
I was going to call him an editor at large or some kind of, a big portion of the funding that they've provided is for travel because, as everyone can appreciate, getting out to remote communities, telling the stories of Indigenous Australians in 2019 involves quite a lot of travel, and this country is big.
so the nasty question that flows from that, of course, is if it was so important, why didn't you Channel 9, Nine Entertainment Group, fund it itself?
It has always, so when I got to the end of last year and decided that I wanted to make 2019 the year that the Herald put Indigenous Affairs back on its radar, I actually didn't have in mind to do this project.
Right.
I had actually brainstormed with Peter Hatcher, international and political editor, a whole different project. But
I saw evidence of that. There was a few. Hatcher wrote a piece.
Yeah.
It was editorial.
This was a whole separate thing. It was about Indonesia and the Pacific and climate change and various things. But as it turned out, that was a little bit trampling on what other people had pitched for. So they encouraged me to think differently and to think domestically. And so I came up with this idea because, of course, I wanted to do it anyway, but it just turns out that this is a great way to start it. Separate to that, I would say that I'm also hopefully in the next couple of weeks going to appoint an Indigenous Affairs correspondent from the Herald's newsroom who will work more into the politics. I mean, it's going to be big couple of years.
Absolutely.
Working towards a referendum on, voice to parliament, etc. There's a lot going on in that space and I just don't think we can have enough people talking about it. So, yes, you're right. I should have probably done it, 2 years ago, but I was always going to make a big issue of it, and just really helpful that this project has come.
Yeah, okay. I don't begrudge you having the dough, frankly. But
and I think I love what she's doing. Like, I think it's amazing.
That's hard not to love.
$100 million, what's not to love?
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's give her a lot of love.
Yeah.
So just tell me about this. You were a reporter for many years
before
reaching these dizzying heights you are now. First question is, do you miss it? And the second is, if you were able to talk to your younger self, what would you tell her to go into journalism?
Yeah, I would. I never wanted to do anything else. I always tell this story. When I was about 12, I started telling my mother that I was going to write stories for a living, and she thought, oh, fabulous, she'll be a best-selling novelist or something. Turns out something a bit different kinds of stories. I've been really lucky. I've done jobs that I've loved. I think the advice I would probably give my younger self would be to be a little more varied. I always say I'm a bit of an atypical Herald editor. I've never worked in Canberra full time. I've never worked at State Parliament full time and did crime and courts for most of my career. So whilst I've always taken a strong interest in all those areas, I've never done a huge amount of reporting in that space, but I guess my news judgment is okay. Seems to be going okay so far. I'm sure the readers will tell me if it's not. I think it's, I wouldn't do anything differently.
Great. The way news media makes money these days is essentially through engagement, through audience engagement, so subscribers and other forms of engagement. So that means, what I'm more interested in talking to you about is whether that means that we're privileging news content or opinions that get more engagement. So do you think there's this, I'm wondering, is there's a shift towards more engage, opinion pieces as a way of getting people riled up and enraged and all that?
I don't see engagement necessarily as being, so we look at a number of factors when we're looking at our content and what the sort of perfect story would be or the perfect sort of engagement is actually not always opinion.
There's a lot of opinion, though. There's more opinion.
There is a lot of opinion, and I think because when you're reading on the website and you're seeing a lot more stuff promoted, I mean, you know, if you read a newspaper of a morning, you might read a couple of the opinion pieces.
Well, that's why I guess my point, no one reads the newspaper anymore, no.
So there are some.
Yes. God bless them as well.
God love them so much. God thank you, them. Everyone. but we try and look at a measure of completion. So that's people actually getting to the bottom of stories, time on article, and then also sort of retention, so people staying with the content on the site. So we think a combination of those factors make for high engagement. I mean, yeah, some weeks, you know, Peter Karcher, for example, might write an absolutely blistering column and it has over 1,000 comments on it. And, you know, I love Herald readers because they don't just sling mud at each other. They're actually debating what he's talking about giving their own opinions, even on the website. That's not always the case, and it can't be the case for every article. I was talking earlier today, readers might recall we did a front page, a cover story of Good Weekend on Brenton Tarrant a few weeks ago. Lead byline was Nick O'Malley, and that piece was 8,000 words. Now, we don't usually run pieces that long. I think the usual length of article in the Good Weekend is 5,000, 4,000 or 5,000 these days.
Yep.
Now, that had an engagement. Like, it took me half an hour to read it. It was so gripping.
And you're a very fast reader.
And I wanted to, and, you know, I can be fast, but I can also really like spend time with it. But, and it sounds absolutely ridiculous to say that the average engagement time was 5:40, but that's actually incredibly good for a digital piece of journalism. And it showed that people were really sticking with it. It also might mean that people stuck with it for 5 minutes and then came back and read it, read more of it later. And that wouldn't be picked up, but I think that sort of time spent is, we're just trying to push out the amount of time people are spending both on individual stories, but also on the site more generally.
Okay.
So I think engagement is not just about inflaming opinions, but attracting people's attention and getting them to stick with us.
Because other news media, and I'm not saying the Herald is innocent in this either, but other news media, news media generally, let's not pick on anyone in particular, but, you know, there is a bit of a culture war going on these days.
Sure.
And I wonder about the readers. I guess if you are, you know, on the left or the right, you know, whatever, you know, that reading that stuff reinforces your views and therefore you keep going back to it. So it is tempting, isn't it?
It is.
Sort of, you know, get those people and keep them, the base, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is true. Although I'm really interested in, I mean, this is a classic example. In March this year, as we always do and have done for many years, we endorsed one side for the state election on the eve of the poll. And we endorsed the coalition, Gladys Berejiklian's coalition government. Mm. Now, I was absolutely bombarded with complaints. I think at one point we had 30 or 35 letters just on the...
How dare you?
I know. Absolutely appalling. I'm giving up my subscription, the whole thing.
Right.
But what was even more interesting was that's fine. And, you know, we've always done that. I'm still amazed that people are surprised that we do it because it's been happening forever.
Yeah.
I wrote about it in a note to subscribers. But interestingly, what we've since found out is that so we're tracking a lot of what people are reading that lead them to subscribe, not necessarily the last thing they read before they subscribe, but the things that they read in the 3 or 4 sessions prior to subscribing, the same number, if not more people read that editorial and did subscribe. So even if everyone who complained had given up their subscription, even more had. So again, it just shows that there's a real tension between left and right, and people are entitled to their views. They don't have to believe what we write. They don't have to agree with us. Mm. But it makes for an interesting discussion about staying in the middle, appealing to different sides. And also, I like to hope that Herald readers want to be challenged. They want they're intelligent and worldly enough to want to understand what someone else is thinking. So I really try. It's one of my talking about things to keep me awake at night. It's how to really keep that balance.
Well, it is, because the Herald is, it's easier in a way to be more overtly on the right and more overtly on the left, right?
Totally.
I mean, being in the center can be actually the loneliest place.
Yeah, but I think it's right for us. I mean, I think, you know, socially progressive, we, you know, embrace, you know, the needing to act on climate change, same-sex marriage, all of the issues that we've talked about a lot over the last couple of years, yet economically and in many ways a little bit politically conservative. So I don't think that's any surprise, and I think it's always been the way. People's horror that we might endorse a coalition, it's happened more than it's happened the other way.
Oh, well, absolutely. I think in history, talking federally, I think there's only two or three times that the Herald has, I mean, going back to
we got it wrong this year.
Indeed, yes. Oh, well. I mean, we're going back to these Methodist ministers, right? I mean,
I don't think
they were going vote Marxist.
No. But, you know,
okay, so I have a couple more questions, and I did touch on one of them earlier in the piece, which was, and this is a political question, it's not a journalistic question so much. I was very interested what you make of the Labour's Christina Keneally and I think it was Joel Fitzgibbon citing Scott Morrison's religion as a reason for him to grant asylum to the Tamil family from Bilawila.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? I mean, is it time to brush up on our Bibles?
Well, I hope not, because I was really bad at all that. I'm not really a believer. Look, I think the Prime Minister makes his religion a part of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked in his acceptance speech after the election about appealing to people of faith and having a view of the world from a religious perspective. I think Christina Keneally is entitled to make those points because she herself is a outspoken Catholic.
Yeah.
And I listened to her interview on, I think it was Radio National yesterday or the day before, where she talked about that and she was challenged about that. And I think it's fair enough. Like, if Scott Morrison holds it, and it is who he is, he makes no bones about it.
No, he's not fibbing.
And he should be entitled to both use it to inform his decision making, but as long as, you know, because he's been voted in as Prime Minister, there's no question about that. But I think he also needs to be mindful of the times when he should leave that those beliefs at the door. It's happening in state parliament also.
The
abortion debate. So there's a really interest. It's really interesting at the moment. These elected members of parliament who, you know, to some people it's quite abhorrent that they have these very religious views. If you're not that way inclined, they don't like that. That's part of the decision making. But it's who they are, and people who voted for him voted for them should know that. So I guess. Should he change his view? You know, should he reverse the decision of a number of? I mean, there's been, I think, 7 appeals on that case.
Yep.
I don't think it's really controversial. As much as there's a huge public outcry of wanting them to stay, the law is the law, and I don't believe they are. You know, they've been found not to be asylum seekers.
Indeed. Well, Alan Jones wants them to stay. Which
I know
is
he does.
Interesting
which
twist.
Is very, which is surprising. I mean, I love that the community loves them and wants them to stay, but maybe they need to find another way to stay. Mm. It's not under the current, the system itself, I think, is a little bit broken. You know, perhaps there should have been an intervention a long time ago.
Well, may well be. I mean, that is another whole new show.
That's another whole, yeah.
So 2 quick questions.
Yes.
We're going to look forward a year and we're going to come back. You're going to come back. You're going to be sitting here doing this interview in a year's time. What has that year been for the Herald, and what's that year been like for you?
In the next 12 months, I definitely want to see our Indigenous coverage really reaching new people and changing people's minds about where we're going and how we reconcile our past and move forward. I think I would like to have not had another conversation about a Liberal Party or Labor Party, for that matter, fundraiser by our CEO. I think it's distracting and not helpful. But broadly, I just want the Herald to keep kicking goals. I want us to be talked about because of the great stories we're breaking, not for any other reason, really. Mm-hmm. And personally, I hope to still be here.
Well, let's hope so. Lisa Davis, thank you so much for your time today. It's taken a while to organise it.
It has.
But it's been absolutely worth it. And I wish you all the best for this,
you
ongoing and in the Herald and all that. And thank everyone for listening to The Fourth Estate. This edition was recorded at the studios of 2SER and heard across the country on the Community Radio Network. And make sure you've subscribed to Fourth Estate on your favourite podcast app so you can hear us talk about the media and politics and a few things in between at your leisure. And we'll be back very soon with more. But in the meantime, you can stay in touch with us on Twitter, where our handle is Fourth Estate AU. Many thanks to my producer, Rod Chambers. My name is Peter Frey, and thank you so much for listening.